I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This episode of the Cult Pop Show podcast was brought to you by our Patreon.
If you want to tell us which films we should watch, get up to 2 extra exclusive podcasts a month, give us something to talk about in the post-credit scenes at the end of each episode, or even contribute to the discussion in the episode itself, then please consider joining the cult and donating at www.patreon.com/cultpopshow.
Thank you for boldly going where you have
gone
before.
Thank you for boldly
before.
Coming.
I was trying to avoid saying that. Once I got the first few words out, I was like, I've ridden myself into a corner. And
you've set in motion a series of events that'll end up in the nuclear end of the world.
Yeah, but thank you for boldly returning. We have gone before. If you listened to our last episode, which was on the Star Trek original series, if you're just joining us, go back and listen to that one. Unless you're a Next Generation fan, in which case keep listening.
Just keep listening
to an episode of this podcast. Doesn't matter if it's this one. Listen to an episode. Please, for the love of God.
What is this episode? What is this podcast?
I'm glad you asked, because I was bloody spiraling out of control there.
You need some constant to drag on to.
Which is a reference to Lost.
I love you, Penny.
We're not talking about. That's going to be the sole reference to Lost.
We're talking about Lost today, everybody.
No, we got one Lost reference. We used it up at the start. It's not going to come back up. I promise.
Was it Penny's boat?
It is not Penny's boat. Oh, now you've got me doing it. Anyway, this is the Cult Pop Show podcast. This is a podcast. The thing about the podcast is this one's no different from any other one. We are two white guys. We have beards. We're in our 30s. Yeah, we are in our 30s, AJ. And I hate when people find out you have a podcast, it's like, yeah, of course you do.
I find I have to very quickly point out the thing that I think differentiates us from other podcasts.
Ours is good.
Ours is good is usually what I want to say. I mean, ours is we're bearded white dudes talking about movies, but we're feminists, hey?
Yeah.
Maybe we could build up that pitiful female listener base. Just to clarify, the females aren't pitiful. the amount of people listening, I meant. The number is pitiful. I actually think every one of our pitiful female listeners is perfect in every way.
I think that should be our new fan base. Both men and women should call themselves our pitiful female listeners.
Okay.
That's our version of Little Monsters or Beliebers are the pitiful female listeners. So,
and that's funny because real talk, we have a lot of listeners that like us are straight white male allies, but it's funny that our fan base of straight white male allies are listening to other straight white male allies. They're not being allies by listening to us.
Well, no, we love every single one of our, I've forgotten the word. Pitiful female listeners. And this is Film for Just Four Nights on the Cult Pop Show podcast. So every 2 weeks we watch and discuss a different film franchise, although we're doing something a little bit different at the moment. We are covering the Star Trek films. There are 13 of them total, but they are, fortunately for us, they are very neatly split up into eras or generations, if you will. And so last week we covered the first 6, which take place in the original series timeline, and then we've got 4 that take place in the next generation.
Actually, sorry, last week we didn't release an episode.
Yeah.
A week before that, we covered the original
series. Then in 2 weeks' time, we will cover the J.J. Abrams slash Justin Lin films, or also known as the Calvin timeline, which I'm excited to find out why it's called that, because I've seen all three movies. I don't remember the word Calvin ever coming up.
Oh, is the writer of them not Calvin or something?
We'll find out in two weeks. Well, you and I will find out in like 3 days, because we're having to record these episodes under a quicker schedule than usual, because I am going to the United Kingdom. If you happen to be in the United Kingdom, come and say hello. So the films we're talking about today are Star Trek Generations, Star Trek First Contact, Star Trek Insurrection, and Star Trek Nemesis. Just a little bit of background on the context of these films. We did this last week talking about the original series. So the Star Trek The Next Generation originally aired from 1987 to 1994. So the seven seasons of Next Generation had wrapped up by the time Star Trek Generations came out.
Wow.
Interestingly, the show was cancelled allegedly at the height of its popularity. There's not much documented about like why it was cancelled or anything like that. But then like later, you know, Wikipedia pages for the films talk about due to the show's cancellation. And so that was the only real context I had that it was cancelled. But it seems like the show like ended, you know, it wasn't right. Just a cliffhanger. It's a very well-liked TV show. You know, I think there was a bit of teething pains, growing pains like there always is. The Next Generation is actually where the term growing the beard comes from, which if you've heard that term, it's the opposite of jumping the shark. So jumping the shark is a reference to a Happy Days episode where the Fonz jumps over a shark on jet skis. And then, or water skis, I guess.
He's on two jet skis.
He's on two jet skis. And he...
That's why people hated it, because it was so stupid.
No, but yeah, if you actually, like, you know, it's one of these, like, drinking the Kool-Aid, Flavor-Aid thing, that it's like, well, if you watch the episode, it's actually water skis. It's quite makes quite a bit of sense. But he... that was when the show dips. Yeah, show dips, and then that's become a term for just a show dipping in quality, and especially like one measurable point of.
I almost used the term "jump the shark" to explain "jump the shark." Then,
nice.
Like I almost just said, it's where it jumped the shark.
There was Commander Riker, played by Jonathan Frakes. He grows a beard in one season, and that's considered like when the show gets good, and. The term growing the beard has become sort of that term, and you know it's when a show matures and stuff like that, and it's usually season or two in, and characters have settled into their roles, the writers have found a flow, things like that. In 2013, the Writers Guild of America ranked The Next Generation number 79 on their list of the 101 best written TV series. The original series went in at number 33. Can you guess the top five in that list, AJ?
Of best written TV series?
Yep, in 2013.
In 2013. All right, we're going to have The Wire in there somewhere. We're going to have The Sopranos. Excuse me?
The Wire, I think, is like six, though.
Wait, I said The Wire. You mean The Sopranos is six?
No, The Wire is number nine. I said you guess the top five.
I thought you were saying it wasn't on the list at all.
No,
that's still very low for what was widely considered to be the best show ever made.
Yeah, for a long Breaking Bad is 13.
Well, yeah, that's fine. That was still new. Well, it had just finished, I guess, in 2013. Okay, Twin Peaks got to be in the top five.
It's not on the top five.
Okay, The Simpsons got to be in the top five.
Twin Peaks is 35. The Simpsons is in 11th place.
This must be the most eclectic list. Like, I've named all the, like, heavy hitters.
You were right, I don't know if you heard, but The Sopranos was number one.
Ah, okay. Yeah. I didn't hear that. All right, what else is there then?
Number two is Seinfeld. Number three is The Twilight Zone. Number four is All in the Family, which I thought was...
This list feels like it was assembled by members of the Writers Guild. Like this feels like the types of shows that writers enjoy,
and not necessarily
TV critics. Oh yeah, that's still a pretty interesting.
Yeah, rounding out the top 10, you got Mary Tyler Moore Show, which is another one that like you know classic comedy sort of thing. Mad Men, Cheers, The Wire, and The West Wing.
Right.
So you like a lot of those makes sense, but like you say,
did America's Dad write this list? All right, everybody, let's get to
American Dad. No, American Dad's not. There's a Family Guy on it.
Oh, interesting.
No, Family Guy's not on it.
Damn. Futurama?
Nah, Futurama's not on either. I was just checking that. Okay, so... yeah, Star Trek The Next Generation. Where were we? There was a bit of talk that they delay. There was a lot of talk about should they create a new series because they thought it might hurt the film sales, like mm-hmm. Because they were still, when the show started, they were still making the original series films, but mm-hmm. They decided though that if they got unknown actors, it would be more profitable than, you know, paying for Nimoy and Shatner over and over mm-hmm. again. Roddenberry, Gene Roddenberry, we talked a lot about last episode, declined to be involved initially, but came on board after he was unhappy with the early conceptual work.
He declined to be on board, but came on the show when he was in a second plane crash and survived.
Yeah, but one of his sort of changes or additions, though, and this is really interesting, that I don't know that it, I guess it came across in the films, but that, you know, this, The Next Generation takes place a century after the original series. And so mm-hmm. there are things that, like, in the TV show, they're not boldly going where no one has gone before as often because there's been a century of exploring space. So they're much less often encountering new species or terrains or anything like that. Mm-hmm. Roddenberry had this belief that workplace interpersonal conflict would no longer exist in the future. And so it didn't have the same crusty banter between Kirk, Spock, and McCoy. And Patrick Stewart said that Berman, who's one of the producers of the show, was a lot more receptive than Roddenberry about addressing political issues on the show, which it sort of went into a bit more than the original series.
Everything you hear about Roddenberry, you're like, bad writer. You know, this incredible legacy under his belt, but like seems to fundamentally misunderstand what storytelling is about. Yeah.
So, Star Trek Generations came out in 1994. It's directed by a guy called David Carson. What do you think it has on Tomatoes? The first film that unites both generations of Star Trek. What could
and Star Wars. No. Yeah. I reckon this has like 40% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Very close, 47%.
Yeah, this is a 47% movie. we're off to a dour start for the Next Generations episode. And for all you fans out there who were like, God, they loved the original series movies. They're gonna love Next Generations. Let me tell you guys, it starts here at a 47%. And we maybe peek our head above the waves for a little, and then we come right back down. This overall, broadly, I would say, if I was being generous, I don't think this is a very good introduction to the Next Generation for two guys who'd never seen the show before. And I mean that about all of the movies, but especially this one. So this one begins sometime after the original series has ended. Presumably the only actors who were alive and or agreed to return were Shatner, the guy who plays Scotty, and
James Doohan, the Russian Koenig, dude, who plays Chekhov. Yeah.
So they climb aboard the newest Enterprise that's going on like its maiden voyage, and it's captained by Cameron from Ferris Bueller.
Alan Ruck.
Who I thought was really good casting because of who I associate him with in Ferris Bueller. He goes on to have the very Cameron crashing his dad's car moment in Star Trek canon of being the man responsible for Captain Kirk's death, because they go on their maiden voyage and they're unprepared for like a big wormhole. Because
it's not so much a maiden voyage as just like a PR.
Let's take her for a spin. Yeah. Yep. And has to stand back while Captain Kirk gets back into captain mode. He manages to save a bunch of people and teleport them off these, like, there's like a supernova going off.
It's a space ribbon.
A space ribbon. And he saves the day, but in the process it blows up and he is sucked out into space. The death of Captain Kirk, ladies and gentlemen and friends beyond the binary. It has happened. It is a fixed moment in Star Trek canon, which I thought, good on them. because how easy is it to bring back dead characters in fiction, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, like, that's the thing. You're never going to see Kirk again.
We're never going to see
and
him again.
Like, the thing is, and then you know, you put that in the back of your mind, and then you watch an hour and a half of the movie and go, I am never going to see Captain Kirk again.
Yep, so flash forward 100 or so years later.
Feels like they're watching the movie. God.
And we're on board the Starship Enterprise. At the helm is Captain Jean-Luc Picard, presumably a Frenchman. I assume, is what I've assumed, that in the 24th century, some kind of French-English colonization happened. Mm. I'm not even kidding. I bet this is part of an Andrew Todd, who's going to come on the show in a couple of weeks, and I'm actually everything we got wrong. Mm. Answer this. Is there a reason why Patrick Stewart's playing a man with a French name, and in this movie we find out French relative, well, relatives with French names, even though he's a Earl Grey drinking Englishman sucking down his hot Earl Greys. Goodness
but this
me.
Is the thing. Like, I feel like the answer is just going to be the same as, because watching this film, I was like, what's Worf's deal? He's a Klingon, but he's a good guy. And people were like, people of just different races can be good people. And it's like, I feel like.
Can be.
People.
You still sound like apprehensive about it.
People with French names can be British. Can be Earl Grey sucking Brits.
My one isn't as potentially as racist as your one. The only way you're getting away with this is that Klingons aren't real and we can say whatever we like about them.
We can use whatever words we want.
So years later, the Enterprise everyone's doing their Enterprise. They've done seven seasons of this shit. But then they encounter that the Space Ribbon is back, and the dude from fucking, what's his name? The
bad guy? Malcolm McDowell.
Malcolm McDowell is in this film. But wait, we saw him transport aboard the Enterprise 100 years ago. What's going on here? There's a Whoopi Goldberg jump scare in this, which is the name of my next heavy metal rock band. So what's going on? Turns out the Space Ribbon... I was expecting some kind of temporal time travel dealy. It's not. And how shocked were you when you found out that Malcolm McDowell and Whoopi Goldberg were not in the future transported back in time when we see them at the start of the movie, but that was actually chronologically where we see them first, and they're just really old. I did not, like, the whole movie I was like, when is Whoopi Goldberg and Malcolm McDowell gonna go transport back in time? No, it wasn't a plot twist, they're just really old. Anyway, so it's not a time travel thing, but what it is that the Space Ribbon is essentially like some kind of heaven. Yeah. It's some kind of purgatory where if you get sucked into it, you get all the Earl Grey you want. it gives you what your heart's desire, even though, like, you know, it's not real.
And it exists outside of time.
And that's where Captain Kirk is. Everyone gets blown up by Malcolm McDowell's character, except for Patrick Stewart, Jean-Luc Picard, and he's like, the only way to save everyone is to get the best damn captain who ever piloted the goddamn fuck Enterprise, and that's Captain Kirk, who I think is in the Space Ribbon. So he goes into the Space Ribbon where he finds Captain
tells
Kirk.
Him that he's there.
Yeah. He goes in there, and at first he's like, oh, I'm having Christmas with my little French children. This is so wonderful. I want to stay here forever. Boo-boo. Yeah, exactly. And then he's like, no, I've got to go get Captain Kirk. He finds him chopping wood at his house where he's living a good life.
At William Shatner's actual house.
Wow. You know why? He wouldn't have wanted to
leave. Yeah.
And he's like, oh, yeah, I've just been here chopping wood, and then you showed up. So for him, it's been 1,000 years and 2 seconds, basically.
Well,
and he convinces him.
It's been 2 seconds, the 1,000 years. Like, He, as far as he's aware, he just arrived in that.
Yeah, but every single
moment is the first moment he's experienced.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. There's still a non-linear, he's been here forever in a lot of ways.
Yeah, but he remember a single moment before that. So it's not it's not that tragic.
Right. Well, anyway, he finds out, you know, everyone thinks you died, and he's like, well, let history think that. And he needs some talking into coming back out, because, and eventually he realizes, like, What does he say? Someone challenges him in the Nexus, which is the name of the space river.
Who would I be to disagree with the captain of the Enterprise?
Yeah. Well, and basically he says, like, everything here is perfect. Oh, no, that's right. He jumps over a rock on his horse, and he's like, that always made me so nervous when I did that as a kid or as a teenager or whatever, except now it didn't make me nervous at all.
Yeah.
But he's like, that is the spice of life, hombre. You wouldn't know. You just drink tea. You got to put some fucking whiskey in that Earl Grey, son. and he's like, you know, like, this isn't real. I'm not feeling human. So they use the Nexus to get out of the Nexus because it's what they want. And I thought, you're still in the Nexus. I'm sure I'm not the only one to come up with this fan theory. But I think Picard never left Nexus, and every other time you've seen Picard in the history of Star Trek as an IP, it's taken place in the Nexus.
That would explain how you got in that Family Guy episode.
Exactly. He convinces them to come out, and they have a big epic space battle. It's what everyone wanted, you know? Picard and Kirk together at last have this big intergalactic battle. I'm just kidding. They fight one guy, on the Grand Canyon, basically, like a rocky canyon landscape. They defeat him, but in the process, Captain Kirk is crushed by a steel bridge.
Fucking bridge that falls, yeah.
And passes away for real. He passes away. Rest in peace.
And his final words are,
I wish I wasn't being crushed by a
George Takei's steel bridge. Famous catchphrase, oh my. Mm.
Yeah, because he's seeing real heaven, right? Do you reckon that's what it was?
That is.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah. That's good stuff.
It was improvised by William Shatner, and it was his him actually looking into the great beyond and boldly going where no man has gone before.
I wish I liked this movie more, because that's fucking sick, right? Yeah. So I also think his
delivery of "Oh my" wasn't that great. I wish it was Shatner, a little bit. Yeah.
That's Shatner, baby.
Yeah.
80% there, but the 20% that isn't there is ruining everything else.
And then Jean-Luc goes on back on the Enterprise and then says, like, you know, you got to live every moment because you'd never get to live it again, even though that's how he saved the day.
He literally just did it. Yeah. So I think very interesting to give... to definitively say Captain Kirk died, but also there are only two men in the world that knew Captain Kirk came out of the Nexus, and one of them died. One of them is Malcolm McDowell. The other one is Jean-Luc Picard, who isn't shown telling anyone about it.
Yeah.
And I thought this was interesting, Richard, because this means that all of the Enterprise characters, including Scotty and Russian guy, the Chekhov, believe Captain Kirk died that day. On Cameron's
ship. Well, in some
ways
he did.
In a lot of ways he did. But isn't that like what a, in the, if you're looking at the timeline of Star Trek, I think it's very bold, excuse the pun, to be like, yeah, the guy, for all intents and purposes, he died.
Mm.
Like his friends, his loved ones believed he died there.
We see Spock Prime in the Kelvin series, and so we know what happens to Spock then. And it was going to be one of my things I was going to ask Andrew Todd when he comes on. Is that, like, what's the canonical death of James T. Kirk? And that's, oh, you see it in the next movie. But yeah, it is interesting. I mean, it's a noble sacrifice that he makes, and I think that the opening of the film is probably the best part of it, to be honest, when I was like, hell yeah, like, you know, we're back with these guys that I love.
But was so happy.
It's interesting though that, like, because you mentioned about, oh, these are the only guys that were available. So Bones was supposed to be there, but DeForest Kelly couldn't get insurance because he was too sick, and it's like a requirement that you have to have insurance on a film set. And
Jesus, and he died like 5 years later, right?
And then Leonard Nimoy was supposed to be on there as well, as Spock, but they he was like, these lines you've written aren't Spock, this could be anyone, and so they just gave his lines to split them between Scotty and Chekhov, which proved his point. But interestingly to notice that when shit starts hitting the fan, people get injured, Chekhov is like, all right, your nurses now come with me. Clearly was originally meant to be a Bones line.
Yeah, right. True. Yeah. So yeah, I don't know. I guess it's just interesting to be like, yeah, the character died, and like what it means to me is that Star Trek, the original series, has kind of a sad ending, you know? Like we see Scotty and Chekhov looking out into the recesses of space, knowing that Kirk just died. And yeah, that's what they thought until they died.
And it was Cameron's fault.
Yeah. A character, like, that's the guy, that's my Continue the Franchise. Why am I saying this now? I just thought of this then, so it wasn't a plan. He should get his own series. Everyone else gets a fucking, like, follow-up. Let's get the guy, let's get Alan Ruck's Star Trek show.
Where yeah,
and the, it's the called, man shamed yeah. for killing
Yeah, it's called Captain Star Kirk. Trek, the man who killed Kirk.
This is great.
Dibs.
Ah, oh, no. I do have a backup idea.
Okay, good.
All right, well, you have to expound on it, though. Okay. You have to be doing some expounding, dude. Seriously.
So the... It's funny, like, you know, 47% is, like, right down the middle in terms of, you know, liking it versus not liking it. I mean, it's not right down the middle, but it's pretty close to it. But
it's as close to the middle as you can get.
Yeah. The... But it's funny that, like, critics were divided on, like, every issue in this film. That, like, so some people were, like... Oh, finally, you know, this one's actually really cinematic. And then other people were like, this just feels like an episode of the TV show. Some people were like, yeah, finally, this great big budget, you know, they're really doing stuff with it. Other people were like, this one looks cheap as hell. And whether it was too completely inaccessible for non-Trekkies, or whether it was insulting to the fan base by pandering to non-Trekkies too much, whether or not the performances were good, Malcolm McDowell's performance especially was like, some people were like, oh, you know, the next Khan, and then some people were like, this guy was terrible. And yeah, it's just interesting because it's like, I landed somewhere in the middle in most of those, but the But yeah, I mean, well, how do you, those issues that I just raised, how do you feel about any of those? Any that you, any that you firmly want to take a side on?
Yeah, you are. Ooh, I don't know if I firmly want to take a side on anything, Richard, but I do. I think one thing that resonated with me there is how the film looks. I'd like to talk about that, because this is my... Everyone is always like, if you're going to get into Star Trek, don't start with the original series. Start with TNG. And if
I've never heard anyone say that.
I've heard 100 people say it.
Well,
it's true,
it
in
evens
my
out
experience.
To 58.
And I gotta say, I am so unattracted to the aesthetic of at least these movies. I think there is something very warm about the original series aesthetic. Maybe it's the cameras it was filmed on, probably is. Something about the lighting, something about that, something about this or that. But the lighting, the camera work, the sets of the Next Generation, at least the movies, and also just the tone is so much less interesting to me.
Well, it's and grimier I had a, in a way. It's like there's it's been lived in.
Yeah. So what I think it is it's like, it's the difference between, like old school vintage cool, like grandpa cool. And dad cool.
Yeah, right.
Right? Like, TNG is very dad cool. It's very dad rock. Yeah. And whereas, like, the original series feels like classic jazz, you know, the jazz greats of the 1960s or whatever. Like, there's...
Paul Bufano. There's,
it's, you know, it's new Coke. It's new Coke. That's what TNG is. A drink I've never had, but feel like I can speak with authority about its effect on the world.
And then what's... The original series.
Original Coke.
Right. And then what's Strange New Worlds?
Lime Zero Sugar Coke? I don't know.
What's Picard?
Like, Picard can be the little Coke gummy lollies.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Fuck yeah. So, and overall, just
wait,
the aesthetic...
So what's the animated series?
Animated Coke.
Okay, yeah, no idea. You're right.
I just think, like, aesthetically and tonally, I find TNG kind of lame. Kind of like, like, my dad thinks this is cool.
But
and
this,
I don't mean
last
my...
Week, last week you were like, yeah, I'm going to get into TNG.
I thought I would. And when I say my dad thinks this is cool, I mean the universal dad. But I also specifically mean my dad in this case. But not that's not what I meant. My dad does think this is cool, but that's not why I said it. And I guess I just prefer the, like, warm toastiness of the original series over how clean, but at the same time dirtier these ones are. I don't know. And I think a big reason for this is a certain character that everyone's telling you before you're watching TNG. You'll fucking love this character. And the character was a funny little android named Data, Richard. And here's the thing. Here's the thing about Data. When he you've sucks. Only watched... when all you've done is watch four movies with him in it. Every movie, every TNG movie is like, you think you know Data? Well, watch what's happening to him now. I don't know Data.
Yeah.
So in this film, he has this very TV B story,
yeah.
like television style B story, where he gets an emotion chip put in him. Yeah. And now he's like being wacky and now he's sad and all these things. And it was like, I have no fucking grip on this character, yeah. dude. Like, I have no idea what he's supposed to be like. Everyone's saying, he's like the Spock of TNG, and I can kind of see
he's
where
the emotionless
that's,
one
the
main character,
yeah, but here it's like so in Generations, we'll talk about this just Data generally for a moment if we can, and these four movies in this one he's got an emotion chip in, so he's subverted and he's different, and then in the next one, in First Contact, what happens to him then? He has kinky sex with a robot cyborg alien. So again, it's like Data as you've never seen him before. And he's like being transformed into a human and he's like experiencing humanity. Stuff which I'm shocked was not explored in seven seasons of a TV show where your second main character wants to be a human.
Yeah.
Like, surely you've gone here before, right? But again, it's Data as you've never seen him before. In Insurrection, he spends probably at least the first act of the film, he's been brainwashed and we think he's evil and that they're like chasing after him. And then in Nemesis, there's another Data, there's two Datas. And so again, the dynamic is switched. But the funny thing is that Nemesis is considered like the Batman and Robin of Star Trek. It's the one that was
ruined
so bad it halted the franchise. And I think out of these four movies, Nemesis is the most compelling Data was the whole time, because it's the least weird, it's the least subverted, and so I actually got a taste of the character,
and also
a lot more.
Has a happy ending as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Spoilers.
Exactly.
Data fucking dies. But then he's in Picard, though, I understand. Which is interesting because they also have to deal with the fact that Brent Spiner is aged.
Yeah.
So,
well, I want to know, Andrew in Picard, is the Data in Picard, have they nixed the ending of Nemesis and gone, no, it's pre-death Data, the one you like, not the new one that takes over.
Or,
anyway.
Or he's like, he went into the Nexus, got what he wanted most, which is to become human, and then has aged.
Oh, that's good stuff, Richard. You should continue the franchise, dibs.
Oh, okay.
So yeah. Also, he looks like a freak. Why do they got to give him like lizard skin and creepy
eyes?
Yeah,
it's terrible.
I don't want to look at him.
Yeah.
I think it's terrible character design. I wish he just looked like the guy. Anyway, Star Trek Generations. That was one of the problems I had with it, is like not understanding something that's clearly being subverted. So I thought that was dumb. And as I alluded to before, I think it is so fundamentally stupid that Kirk and Picard finally team up after all these years, and it takes place in like a canyon.
Yeah, in Utah.
Like it should be in fucking space, man.
Kirk doesn't go.
I always wanted you to go into space, man. They should go back on the Enterprise. There should be a scene where he's like, "I missed the old." Yeah, that's. I guess it's just Han Solo and Force Awakens, but they would have done it first. And I just think that fight should have taken place in space, or it should like around the ribbon, like right at the edge. You know, put some action into it. It feels like a mad budget cut.
Yeah, it was interesting that like when I saw the scene, and I still haven't pinpointed why I know this, but like as soon as Kirk went on that bridge, I was like, oh, he dies in a bridge collapse. I've always known that. Wow. I don't know how. And I can't remember. But I don't think I've seen that scene. I think I might have seen it parodied, or I might have seen something where people talk about it. But yeah, if anyone can remember something where Kirk dying in a bridge collapse is referenced, let me know. Because yeah, just as soon as the scene started, I was like, oh, I know this. Like, this is the
We're going to get a bunch of tweets being like, oh, it's from Star Trek Generations.
Mm.
Anyway, I didn't think this was terrible. I gave it 3 stars, but yeah, I didn't heart it for all of those reasons.
Yeah.
And the best part was the opening. I think that was a great scene.
Yeah.
And when William Shatner came back after an hour and a half,
it's so genuinely, you get to the point where you're like, maybe he's just not in it again. That's insane. Yeah. it's so long before he appears.
And when he does appear, I was like, sorry, Picard fans, I'm on Team Kirk. I think to answer Weird Al Yankovic's white and nerdy question, do I like Kirk or do I like Picard? I think Kirk's way cooler.
So I much prefer Kirk. I read some articles that were like,
I have other reasons. It's not just that he's sexy, but you can't be opposite.
But like, I think especially in this film as well, I don't think Picard comes across very well. He's just grumpy and angry. When I knew that, like, oh, the thing is that it's like Kirk's the hothead, and then Picard is the cool-headed one who's, you know, treats everything with a sense of poise and rationality. But he's, not in these films. And
That's the thing. I think that these are bad sample sizes of the next generation.
Absolutely. I much prefer Captain Kirk.
Yeah, I prefer the whole fucking Enterprise crew.
I didn't really like any of the supporting characters in this.
No, neither. Yes, there is only one main female character on the original Enterprise crew, but she's such a like firecracker. Like she's got such personality, and I couldn't help but notice in these movies that for a show that's like touted as being like this utopian future where conflict is literally
people are bald.
Yeah, things like that. It's supposed to be all like humanity has progressed so much. You've got the male actors playing like this Shakespearean, an unlikely hero for a starship captain. You've got one of them's playing this like quirky android. You've got one of them is like this crazy Klingon dude. Like, all of the men in the main cast are playing such interesting characters, and then there are the women, and I can't tell you if there are 2 women characters or 3 women characters because they were all so similar. I remember one of them's called Crusher, and one of them gets married to Jonathan Frakes at some point. They're the same person. Is there 2 or 3 women in the Enterprise crew? Main crew.
2 or 3 too many, if you ask me.
No. We just said we're a feminist podcast.
Well, let's put it out to our pitiful female listeners and let us know how many women are on the Enterprise.
They're boring. They're not interesting. They're not given anything to chew on like the men are. The men are playing these like crunchy, interesting Moorish characters. No one's fucking dressing up as Crusher at Comic-Con. Yes, they are. Yes, I know they are. Mm. But I'm illustrating my point.
Yeah. It was the 5th series, including the animated, Star Trek Voyager, that had a female captain of the Enterprise, Kate Mulgrew, who's coming to Armageddon in Auckland in a couple months. But Catherine Janeway, who does make a cameo appearance in one of the later films.
Okay. Well, I know nothing about Voyager, eh? I don't even know what it looks like.
Yeah, I know Kate Mulgrew is in it.
Oh, cool.
Fun fact about Star Trek Generations, just before we move on. Little piece of film history. This is the first film to ever receive a website to promote it.
Ah, very cute. Yeah. That's nice.
So, next up we have Star Trek First Contact. This came out in 1996. And was directed by Jonathan Frakes himself, Commander Riker. And what do you think it has on Rotten Tomatoes?
What does Wrath of Khan have on Rotten Tomatoes?
Oh, can I make me open my doc from last week?
Yep. 2 weeks ago, actually. We didn't record anything last week. Sorry about that, everyone.
Sorry, pitiful females. I will.
No, don't call them pitiful females. They're the listeners.
Pitiful female.
The pitiful refers to the listenership. If we start making pitiful females our catchphrase, we're going to get in trouble.
Okay, Wrath of Khan hit 86%.
I reckon this has got around that. Let's say 86 for first contact.
Would you, if I had to give you, say, one either side of that, which side would you go?
I would go probably slightly, maybe 87, maybe slightly
above. It's 93%.
So slightly above, practically 87. Yeah. So this is the highest rated so film far, we've covered so far. Yeah.
I think the highest of the franchise is the 2009 film.
Right. So this one is about they're under attack from the Borg, which is a hive mind of cybernetic people who their plan is to go back in time. They've done this several times already. They've gone back in time to other planets where they've assimilated the population, and so now there's all these planets of Borg that look like they've been there for all of history, and Earth is next on the chopping block. So they follow them through like a wormhole, and then it's the movie separates into two stories, which, forgive my shoddy memory, they felt like different stories.
Yeah.
Like, I don't understand. Like, one of the stories is that they're continuing to try and stop the Borg, and the other story is that first contact between man and alien happened in 2063 by a man named James Cromwell's character.
Zephram Cochrane.
Zephram Cochrane.
Which is a name that first appeared back in 1967. So it's like, in Star Trek canon, this is...
It's putting a face to the name.
He's the Neil Armstrong,
That's awesome, So he invented warp drive. And when aliens, so the threshold in the galaxy is once a planet figures out warp drive, that's when they are allowed to be contacted by the wider galaxy, which that might be one of the coolest pieces of canon in anything I've ever heard.
Well, yeah, it's just that like anything below that is like, who cares not about that planet? They're not civilized enough.
Yeah.
But that puts you on the map.
That's my favorite thing about Star Trek now. What a cool idea that because what's great about it is warp drive is like more or less original to Star Trek. So it's like used its own game pieces to be like, this is what's so important about it. So anyway, one group is trying to like convince him, because he's not the hero everyone maybe thought he was, to go through with what was gonna happen anyway without them. Mm. I don't know. It seemed like it was like, the Borg stuff didn't change. I just didn't watch the movie properly. But anyway, those are the two stories. Data gets kidnapped by the Borg queen, who makes out with him at one point. And what has got to be the sexiest Star Trek has ever been.
Oh, bro, the Borg queen's hot as fuck.
Oh, bro, I got the fucking hardest erection. So there's a bit where you see, like, she's just a head and a torso on, like, a crane and gets lowered down onto, like, robotic legs. And, what, 1996?
There's some really cool shots and effects in those films.
Looks fucking awesome. Yeah. When we see her come down on the crane, I literally was just like, holy shit.
Mm.
Like, so cool. Such a cool effect.
In Nemesis, there's one shot with the two Datas, and they're sitting back to back on chairs, and the camera starts on one of them, and in one, like, unbroken shot, the camera lifts up, spins around, and ends up facing. So it, like, goes over the top of them, does a 180, and then lands facing the other Data. Two people played by the same actor. There's obviously a hidden cut in there somewhere. An effect like that wouldn't impress me, but to doing that in 2002, it's seamless, and it's like, it's a really cool shot. Like, I was just very impressed by it.
Picard has like a love affair with Alfie Woodard, who's like a 2063 human. We also find out like World War III happened.
Yeah, this, at some so point. 2063 has taken place in the wake of a World War III that sort of decimated a lot of Earth's resources and stuff.
You would think that would negate how civilized of a planet we are, they did warp speed, but they 10 years ago they destroyed all their major governments with the World War. Maybe we shouldn't first contact these people.
That's why
So what happens in the end? They win, they defeat the Borg. Oh, it's so funny actually. They put the Borg in a, they don't know this till it's revealed to the audience, they're in the holodeck and they shoot at James Cromwell's ship as it's going into warp speed. But because they're in a holodeck, they've been tricked and they just miss. And it's so funny. You just see them shoot and you see the little like missile or whatever it is just quietly miss the ship.
Yeah.
Oh my God. It was so funny. And they think Data's turned evil, but it turns out he was just tricking and he kills the Borgs. And the whole episode is, the whole movie is like a sequel to an episode where Jean-Luc Picard was assimilated by the Borg.
Yeah.
It's, so it's also taken place in the wake of that.
Yeah, that was like season four, I think. And the Borg hadn't been mentioned since then. But the...
So, I mean, very similar to Wrath of Khan, right? Mm. Like, almost feels like it's directly paralleling the fact that that was a sequel to a specific episode.
Well, the... Yeah, apparently it just came out of the studio thought, let's make a time travel film. And then the writers were like, oh, we wanted to write a Borg film. And then they were like...
And they're like, good. And in 20 years, it's not like some podcaster is going to be confused by the plot when trying to relay it because of how separate these ideas seem.
Yeah, this is generally considered one of, if not the best Star Trek movies. It did very well at the box office, topping the charts for only a week before it was knocked out of top place the following week by 101 Dalmatians.
the 1996 one.
Yeah.
That's great. What did you think of this?
Because
we'd been told great things. Mm. We'd been told, oh, you guys are going to fucking froth First Contact.
Yeah, it's good. And I think I can see why people like it. But having no connection to the TNG cast, I just didn't care. Like, this would have been a great fifth original series movie.
I was
really fascinated by the idea of, like, because, you know, the fourth movie where it's in the original series where they go back in time to San Francisco and it's like, oh, we're going to do a time travel one as well, but going to like one of the most important times in human history that hasn't happened yet is such a fascinating concept. And I did love finding out that it's like Zefram Cochrane is a character that exists, and the way, because the way everyone talks about him is like, oh my God, I can't believe I'm meeting Zefram Cochrane. I did read that the Tom Hanks was like one of the original choices to play him.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for, but you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
But wow. Jonathan Frakes thought it would be distracting because he was too big of a name. But I kind of think that's why you should have cast Tom Hanks. Because I love the idea of, like, you know, Tom Hanks playing the schlubby guy who's like a scientist and doesn't think he's going to amount to anything. But for everyone watching the film, we're like, that's fucking Tom Hanks. And the people in the film are like, you are Tom Hanks. Yeah. I know you're, I can know looking at you that you are going to achieve greatness. You just don't know it yet.
That's awesome. That's such a good idea. Yeah. Yeah, James Cromwell's good though. It was all right.
He played the character again last year in an episode of Lower Decks, so voice acting. But yeah,
great stuff. Cool. He plays it well. He gets to deliver the "you guys are on some kind of Star Trek" line, which, boy, does that sink like a rock in the film when he says it. But yeah, I did like this film. However, it is not better than most of the original
series.
5 out
of 6
movies
of the original series.
Yeah, I didn't think so. And I also reckon that the story's so cool and it's so good, but I wish this film was more cinematic. Because despite this being the best TNG movie, I'd say, now Insurrection feels more like a long episode, but this still also felt like a long episode. And it's like, no.
This should feel like Apollo 13.
This should feel like a, like, here's my big note for this movie that everyone loves, how I would make it better. This should be Zefram Cochrane should be the main character of the movie. You remember Blink, the one Doctor Who episode I like?
Yeah.
How, like, the best thing about it is that the Doctor is, like, a side character in someone else's story?
Mm. I don't know that's the best thing about it. Like,
no, but it's a cool thing. That's what First Contact should have been. We should have opened with Cochrane. He should have been the main character, and the Star Trek characters enter into his life from his perspective.
Mm.
I think that's what this film should have been, because it opens with, like, sort of flashbacks of Picard getting Borged back in the day.
Which is, you know, to catch the audience up.
But I reckon a brief history of warp drive, you know, like some kind of montage that set the scene, because there's a lot of talking in this movie when there could be doing. And one thing that immediately put me off this revered film was at the start, when they're following the Borg to Earth, and then Data's just like, oh, we've gone through a wormhole and we're back in time. It's like, there's no visual for this. There's no discovering it through the character's eyes. We're just being told this because it's more convenient to do it that way.
Yeah.
And because on TV you've only got 40 minutes or whatever. But, like,
$40.
I just think that this movie would have been so much better if it had broken that TV show format and structure and been its own movie. I think it would have felt way cooler, and all the cool stuff that's already in it would have been enhanced by it. Because, like, does Cochrane even really have a struggle? He just kind of doesn't want to do it, and then they phase him, and then he's like, all right, I'll do it. You know? Like, I don't know. For the best one ever, I just was kind of disappointed by it, I think.
Yeah, and I mean, maybe it's just a victim of overhyping as well. But, I love the idea of the Cochrane thing. And I was always interested in, like, oh, that I know, like, the Borg is the next generation's big villain, or, like, you know, one of their iconic villains. And to then just not really care when I saw it. And it's like, I would have rather just had the Cochrane storyline as directed by Ron Howard.
Yeah.
Ridley Scott and John McTiernan turned down directing.
Oh, they turned down directing. Yeah. It's a lot less impressive of a stat when it's they turned down, not in talks or anything. Yeah, yeah, no shit.
there was talk.
You're not going to get Ridley Scott.
Yeah. There was talk originally of the original draft was called Star Trek Renaissance, and it was the Borg going back to prevent the modern European civilization during the Renaissance. And so there would have been like sword fights and all the shit. Data would have become Da Vinci's apprentice.
They love doing this shit, eh?
Yeah, they thought it would be risk becoming campion over the top. And also Patrick Stewart refused to wear tights.
Oh, I would have thought it was his idea. He seems like the kind of guy. Yeah. Who's pushing to do these, like, holodeck set. There's how many episodes of the show do you reckon are, like, just them having fun on the holodeck?
Yeah, not enough, some kind probably.
Of period piece.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you imagine just Patrick Stewart just walked into their office and was like, I want to do a Renaissance film. And they were like, but Mr. Stewart, he goes, make it so. Yeah, we talk about titles a lot on this podcast. First Contact's a great title. And, like, the idea of
a good title.
First Contact as, like, a point in history, like, you know, like we say moon landing, that it's like, First Contact.
I love it. I love funky canon, like, yardsticks.
Yeah.
You know, and your world building. Fun stuff.
There were some working titles for the film. It was, the planned title was Star Trek Resurrection, which was scrapped when 20th Century Fox announced that the new Alien was going to be called Alien Resurrection. And so it was, like, rebranded, not, like, the same year. So it was, like, officially announced as, it's going to be Resurrection, the next one, blah, blah, blah. But the other working titles were Star Trek Borg.
Okay.
Star Trek Destinies.
Okay.
Star Trek Future Generations.
It's really, the First Contact is so obviously the title that this film needed.
And Star Trek Generations 2.
What on earth? Very interesting. Okay, nice.
Anything else you want to say about Star Trek Generations 2?
Maybe something will come to mind, but I'm happy to power through it.
Yeah, let's do it.
All right. Engage. One thing that maybe we should talk about here, especially to do with the cast, and we've sort of skirted around him and his Earl Grey sucking ass, but Picard as a character, I think, part of the reason I didn't connect with him as much as seemingly everyone else who, you know, got into Star Trek did, I think it's because Patrick Stewart has spent the rest of his career being like, I can be rude too.
Mm.
And because of that, and I'm more familiar with him in
American Dad.
Blunt Talk was the first thing I threw him a Blunt Talk.
What was like?
It was like a Seth MacFarlane show, like live action show, where he plays like a disgraced news anchor. Patrick Stewart does.
Wow.
And there's American Dad as well, and just like him just being dirty and in extras, his hilarious scene and extras where he talks about I've seen everything. It's so funny because it's Patrick Stewart. But now I think because I'd never really watched Star Trek before, it has the opposite effect. Whereas like now I see him crying over the sudden death of his nephew, Renault, a very French name, might I add, in Generations, and he's doing this series and he's describing, he's like, he was so kind and so gentle. And I remember hearing him say gentle and being like, like just the silly, it's just a silly posh way of saying it.
Yeah. Gentle. And
I think he's so gentle. And I think I find it silly because I know that Patrick Stewart, like Patrick Stewart to me is this like cheeky, dirty old man more than he is like this very serious character.
Who didn't know he was uncircumcised. Known of...
What do you mean by that?
That
is this a lead into Insurrection?
Star Trek circumcision. No, he
Star Trek uncircumcised. You know, like these like get names for like re-releases of video games are, like Unchained or Reloaded. They're like Star Trek uncircumcised.
Well, I mean, that's what Bigger, Longer, and Uncut is referring to.
The
South Park movie. No, on Graham Norton, Patrick Stewart told the story about he was talking with his wife. And he said, like, you know, being circumcised. And his wife was like, no, you're not. And he was like, I think I would know if I'm circumcised or not. And I am circumcised. Mm-hmm. And then she's like, no. And then so he went to the doctor and, like, he was getting his checkup. And he was like, doc, had this silly argument with my wife. Am I circumcised? And his doctor looked down and looked back up and said, "Nat." So I don't know what he thought circumcision was, but Patrick Stewart has a foreskin.
What on earth? What did he think was there before?
Yeah.
I mean, foreskins aren't exactly subtle about it. You know what I mean? Like, they're there.
So anyway, Star Trek Insurrection at the Capitol came out in 1998.
Let's calm down just a second. Insurrection of the Capitol.
That's why I continue the franchise.
That's where I've heard that word before.
Yeah. 1998, again directed by Jonathan Frakes. What are those at Rotten Tomatoes?
Mm-hmm. Nice. I reckon this has like 30% on Rotten Tomatoes. 55,
not that low.
It's funny, the Frakes like... He makes the best of the TNG era and then comes back and
because I remember he was announced to be directing some of Strange New Worlds or something, like that they got him back for one of the newer series or maybe even Discovery, and
he's directed pretty much every series.
But then it was like
he's seen everything.
I remember that, and it was like, yes, like, you know, he gets it, and he was one of the ones that when J.J. Abrams was announced to not be directing Beyond, that a lot of people were like, get Frakes.
Yeah, I don't think these are necessarily poorly directed films, but I don't think he can direct himself very well.
Right.
Whenever he's on screen, and he has like a love story in this one, there's just an element that feels very like, all right, I'm going to jump in the pool now. Yeah. He's just been behind the camera directing another scene, and then he comes on, he's like, all right, guys, I'm gonna do it. Okay. Let's do a silly one. And it's like he chose all his silly ones when he did takes. He's always got this weird smile. I don't know. I didn't like him.
He has a very like smug sort of smile. I'm most familiar with this work on Beyond Belief, Fact or Fiction.
Yeah, yeah. Have you ever been for a walk in the park?
You're the tallest man you've ever seen. It's my favorite one. You ever notice how many restaurants are theme based these days? How much money would it cost you to spend the night in a cemetery?
It's so good. It's so good.
Do you like
good.
Bike riding?
Yeah.
If you haven't seen, look up Jonathan Frakes Asks You Questions if you haven't seen it before.
Yeah,
it's
I
used to fucking love Beyond Belief, Fact or Fiction as well.
Terrified me though.
Oh my
so
God.
Scary.
There's so many stories from that, but I remember it was a show, it was like an hour long show, and they would show you 6 10-minute stories, and three of them were true, three of them were false. They were all like things that were like, you know, those stories about like, oh, and then even when she passed away, we saw we could feel her spirit, and like, or it was those kind of stories. And the three of them were true each episode. But he would start each segment like asking you a random question. And it sort of went viral on Twitter like a year or two ago of like...
Me on a date.
Yeah,
me on
my brain at 3 a.m. And then there's also compilations of like him telling you you're right or you're wrong. Because at the end of each segment, they're like, well, you thought this one was correct? Well, you're right. And then so it's just like, nope, not this time. Nope, we made it up.
It's so funny, especially when like the story was just like exorbitantly supernatural, and he's like, this one's not true, and it's like, yeah, no shit, this one's not
true.
You mean the one with the ghost that came out of the wall and ate someone? You mean that's not true?
Yeah. But the one about the plant which convicted someone of a murder, the plant that acted as a witness, that's true.
Wow. Got me.
Yeah.
Did you watch Ripley's Believe It or
I
Not?
I did, yeah, with Dean Cain.
I conflate those in my head sometimes.
Yeah, they were the same time slot.
Always conflating. Star Trek conflation is about... So everyone's like, Data's gone crazy. He's been messing with this planet of simpletons, these village people, and so they go and collect him. And I'm not going to go through the whole plot, but it turns out that basically there's this planet where all these people live, and the environment has kept them young for centuries, and the government wants to seize the land, and the Enterprise crew decide to pull an Ethan Hunt and go rogue, insurrect themselves, and it turns out the bad guys who are obsessed with de-aging themselves split off from the very crew they're trying to de-locate all these years later, and Picard fucking gets his dick wet. And it's such a weird character to give it with a woman who's like 200 years older than him, and at one point he's like, you know, I always was attracted to older women, and the joke being that the actress is like 30 years younger. It's fun, isn't it? I don't know, he's such an asexual character to me that I get weird whenever they give him love stories.
Yeah. And when he's like trying to get her to turn him on, and he's like, make it grow.
Very good.
Thank you.
Yeah,
they
so...
They brought you by 2009 Reddit.
Yeah. And they beat the bad guys, the government, the...
Yeah, the fucking Star disgusting Federation. Freaks bad guys with their skin fucking pulled back, and one of them is played by F. Murray Abraham.
So yeah, I thought this one was... Drumroll, please. Not that bad. I didn't think this was that bad. I didn't think it was very good. I think I probably preferred it to Generations, which is interesting now knowing that the Rotten Tomato score is higher, because I thought it was like...
I actually came to this quite proud to be a contrarian.
Yeah. Now I've got nothing. No, I don't know. I thought it wasn't terrible. It just, again, felt like a really long episode of the show.
Yeah. I just didn't really care about any of these except kind of First Contact, because I was like, I'm going to buy into this one because it's the best one.
Yeah, right. So yeah, I don't know. Nothing much to really say on this one, because I just didn't hate it but didn't love it, and that's it. That's all there is. That's all she wrote.
Sweet, let's move on.
Well, how about we talk about Nemesis and involve Insurrection?
These two are
up.
Like interchangeable for me. Yeah. I think as well. And even the terms Nemesis and Insurrection are like Interchangeable. I use those interchangeable. The Nemesis at the Capitol. I don't even know what the difference between them. But
Resident
yeah.
Evil 3 Insurrection.
yeah, Star Trek Nemesis came out in 2002. It was directed by a guy called Stuart Baird. Jonathan Frakes was unavailable. He was finishing work on Clockstoppers.
Yes.
He also directed the Thunderbirds movie and the Thunderbirds I Go music video by Busted was directed by Jonathan Frakes.
I really like that Jonathan Frakes, despite being like the epitome of like a gun for hire director, kind of has a style between these films. Thunderbirds, a couple of Star Treks, and Clockstoppers. Yeah. Absolutely, they're dripping with Frakes.
Yeah, he also did The Librarian, Return to King Solomon's Mines, and The Librarian, Curse of the Judas Chalice.
My mum has all the Librarians on DVD.
Are you fucking serious? This is the first I've heard of these movies.
You know who stars in them?
Olympia Dukakis.
Will Wheaton.
Yeah, that was the other thing I wanted to talk about. I thought Will Wheaton was in The Next Generation, but no, he's not in the movies, I guess. He has a non-speaking cameo on Nemesis, and he's in the Family Guy episode.
Wait, who is he in Nemesis?
He's at the wedding in the start. He doesn't speak, though. Apparently he has lines in a deleted scene, but...
Whoever that character is, lost to time. Don't tell us, Andrew. We don't want to know Crusher. Wheaton plays. Crusher?
Yeah.
Relation?
Any relation? I don't know.
No relation. Imagine that. They're just bold enough to have two characters with the surname Crusher.
Yeah.
He
appears regularly in the first four seasons of the TV series and sporadically in the next three.
Right.
He is the son of Beverly Crusher and Jack Crusher.
Jack Crusher. Where's his spinoff? Screw Star Trek Picard. I want Star Trek Jack Crusher.
Yeah.
So this one is about... they find another Data on another planet. They put him back together and he doesn't seem to remember anything, but it turns out he is sort of a lure for a mysterious ship that approaches them. And what's the name of the guy on the ship?
Oh, it's got a crazy name. Psycon or something.
Zizar or some shit.
Shinzon.
Shinzon. Shinzon's there, played by a very young, very bald Tom Hardy.
And I think very good Tom Hardy. I thought he was great on this film.
But what's funny is that he's actually a clone of young Picard. And that's funny because we all know that when Patrick Stewart was young, he actually looked like James McAvoy, not Tom Hardy. And it turns out that like he's evil and wants to suckle the Earl Grey out of
assimilate him. The cloning process like is unsustainable and so he needs a blood Earl Grey transfusion from Picard.
And here's what's funny about Tom Hardy being in this film. Richard, I knew that Tom Hardy was in a Star Trek film. There was a meme about like actors you don't know who were in Star Trek, but I thought he was like a fairly small role.
In one episode, right? Or something.
Like that. He's the second main character in this film. And what's so funny about that is, have you seen, and I hope you have you seen the screenshots of Tom Hardy's MySpace?
Yes.
Where he just looks like a fuckboy, right? And it's like him doing like poser shots and stuff.
Yeah, and like these pulling down his pants slightly.
These leaked in like 2012, and it was very like, lol, this is Tom Hardy before he was famous.
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. He'd been in a Star Trek movie already. He'd been the main villain in a Star Trek movie before he took those MySpace photos. That's so funny to me because those photos reek of just loser, like unemployed. Guy who's unemployed, like not gonna go anywhere, shocked to get it. I thought Tom Hardy came to fame after that. He was a main character in one of the biggest franchises in the world.
Yeah.
Before then. That makes those photos 10 times funnier. like, why would you do that if you already had, like, a career on the rise? What was his big break? Was it this? Did he do much after this?
Rock and Roller and Bronson were the same year.
But they were, like, 2006.
Eight.
So they were, like, when was this? 2002?
Yeah. His film debut is Black Hawk Down. He was also in Layer Cake.
But still, like, Nemesis did not lead to more roles immediately.
Yeah. He became a household name with Inception, I would say.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah. So anyway,
that's just
what I thought was funny about this. Yeah. What is, did we say what this has on Rotten Tomatoes?
I do not believe we did.
So bad enough to ruin any future movies. I'm thinking we're talking like 19%.
38%.
It's not that bad, is it?
You said, yeah.
And Richard, I stand by it because this film, I didn't think it was that bad. Hey, yeah. I probably still enjoyed it more than Generations. I thought for the film that wrecked the franchise, I thought there's some pretty good stuff in it. I thought that the final battle, which, listen up, Star Trek Generations, actually takes place in the stars and it's in like this green nebula. Mm. I thought it was very classy. It added a great kind of aesthetic touch to the film. And I imagine the like poster and marketing is very like that color of green. Yeah. Yeah, that's the cool. Logo, that's like, cool stuff.
I so distinctly remember, I said this last episode, but like, I so distinctly remember like coming late into a cinema and seeing the end of this trailer and just like the title reveal and people being like, oh shit. Like an actual audible gasp in the cinema when it was revealed to be Star Trek Nemesis, or like when people, I guess, were realizing what was happening. But it's very Godzilla 1998, the color scheme and everything.
It so is, yes. Yeah.
But the... Yeah, it's interesting because it says that, like, it was a box office failure, earning $67 million against a $60 million budget, and plans for a final film featuring the Next Generation cast were scrapped, and they rebooted the film series in 2009. It's only 7 years later, which is crazy, because it's, like, one of these classic things where those Nemesis and Star Trek 2009 came out in complete different eras of my life, you know? But the tagline for the film is, "A generation's final journey begins."
All
right. So it's like, but I don't know, like it seems like this was planned to be the final one because the way it ends is very final.
Deep Space Nine had come out by this point as well.
Deep Space Nine might have finished by this point
because Worf shows up, they're like, "Oh, you're back from Deep Space Nine, are you?" And I'm assuming Worf is a character in Deep Space Nine.
Probably, yeah. He's also Picard talks to Kate Mulgrew's character from Voyager in this film. So Deep Space Nine went from 93 to 99. Voyager went from 95 to 2001. And Enterprise went from 2001. So Enterprise was on there at this point, 2005.
Wow! That's insane. I think, you know how also, sometimes...
the doctor who says, like, "Jesus, man, I'm a doctor, not a door mechanic," or whatever, he's from Voyager.
He says, "Jesus, man, you're not circumcised. Why'd you think that?"
Jesus, man, I'm a doctor, not a penis expert. I'm not an expert. I've seen a few penises.
I think that I have a better title for this movie. Mm-hmm. I have a better title for this movie. And it's a title which, like, I'm using the script to come up with this title. Mm-hmm. So why didn't they call it this anyway?
Deep Space Nine.
No. Because I think Nemesis is a bit generic, and I think it's like, yeah, well, how many nemeses do these people have, really? Like, I can't imagine this is the final boss of Star Trek. This movie should have been called, like, Star Trek Echo, or Echoes. Mm. Because Shinzi, or whatever his name
Shinzo
is,
Abe.
he refers to himself when they're talking, because they're like, "I'm not how you remember me looking, am I?" And because, you know, they're trying to make up for the discrepancies between what Tom Hardy and Patrick Stewart look like, which is quite a lot of discrepancy. And they're like, "Yeah, this is a version of you who's had his nose broken, who's been, you know, gone through pain and all these sorts of things." But he's like, "But the eyes, do you recognize the eyes?" And I was watching this on my laptop and I literally held my hands up to the screen so that I could only see Tom Hardy's eyes, and I was like, "Doesn't look like Patrick Stewart."
Anyway, this is the first of two Tom Hardy movies where he didn't see the light until he was a man, and by that point, it was nothing but blinding.
Exactly. But he's like, "I'm not you, am I? I'm a clone. I'm an echo of you." And I was like, "Call the fucking movie Echo. What
call the movie Star Trek-o."
Star Trek-o. Anyway. Here's my theory.
Mm-hmm.
I think the people that say this one is so bad that it ruined Star Trek for generations, these are the people who just like the show too much. And I've seen and can recognize bad movies. I don't think any of these movies are bad. I think they're just a bit boring and maybe aren't giving the fans what they're wanting. They're not real world bad. They may be Star Trek bad. But in the real world, when you've got no other context, I think they're fine. And I didn't even like any of these movies that much, but that's sort of my point. It's like the difference between the best one, First Contact, and the worst one, Nemesis, is so negligible to me. Like, yes, First Contact is absolutely better than Nemesis. I'm not trying to kick anyone's fucking nuts about that. But I just don't think First Contact is that good, and I don't think Nemesis is that bad. I gave it 3 stars, and so they end up not next to each other, but they can wave at each other from either side of a spectrum, and they can probably hear each other if they speak.
Yeah, well, there's no sound, I suppose, so...
Well, thank God. Thank God. Sick and tired of listening to your bullshit.
We talked last episode about how the thing about how every odd-numbered Star Trek movie is bad.
And in tatters at
but
this point.
The thing is, though, that I've found out this way, that, like, because we were like, well, that would mean that Nemesis is great and then Star Trek 2009 is bad. Apparently, if you slot in Galaxy Quest, which came out in between Insurrection and Nemesis, that you count that as a Star Trek movie, that's the good one. Insurrection and Nemesis are both bad ones. 2009 is a good one. Into Darkness is a bad one. Beyond is a good one.
Yeah, but who's slotting in Galaxy Quest? You can't just... Yeah, if you slot in fucking like Commando into Harry Potter between Harry Potter 4 and 5. Like, they're not...
Well,
it didn't come
out in between the two.
Okay, fine. Okay, it's sound then. It's sound.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say about the TNG films?
I don't think so.
Yeah. There is, in terms of continuing the franchise, there's the very obvious one, which is Star Trek Picard, which came out in 2020, ran for 3 seasons. From what I understand, the first season is fine, not that great, and then season 2 and 3 are much better. Jonathan Frakes comes in, Data comes in, and I would love to have explained to me when I feel like it. I don't want someone just attacking me with that information. I want to be ready to receive it about why Data comes back, because he dies, yeah, at the end of Nemesis, fortunately, and not a moment too soon.
We got to be breaking all our Gen X listeners' hearts here by talking about how much we hate Data, right?
Yeah. It's worth pointing out.
Gross! A little salamander man! I don't like him. I don't think he's charming. I don't think he's funny.
There's a couple of things I actually should have mentioned about Nemesis, that the cast didn't really like it. LeVar Burton and Marina Sirtis said they spoke very unflatteringly of Beard, who the director, saying he didn't watch any episodes of The Next Generation. Frakes said that if he had directed it, he would have made it less villain-centric and given more screen time to the regular Next Generation cast, i.e. himself, I'm guessing.
Yeah, what a funny thing to say about this, like, critically reviled movie and be like, if I directed, I would have taken away the 1 ounce of personality.
I would have been in it more.
Yeah, I would have been in it more.
Yeah, and Patrick Stewart later said it was a pretty weak finale for The Next Generation.
Okay, here's how he would have said it. It was a pretty weak finale for The Next Generation. Now you go.
It was a pretty weak finale for The Next Generation.
I did Ian McKellen and you did Sean Connery. We're just, all our old men actors are just mixing around right now.
That wasn't Sean Connery.
No?
That was a flawless Patrick Stewart.
I apologize. I mistook your flawless Patrick Stewart
for a terrible
Sean Connery.
Star Trek Picard. I'm fascinated by Star Trek Picard. And yeah, apparently season 3's good, but yeah, like, the whole fucking cast comes back by that point. Yeah.
It should just be called The Next Generation.
Yeah. It should be. Maybe it is. Maybe I'm not. Oh, the first episode of it is called The Next Generation. The first episode of season three, sorry. It's, yeah. And then the last episode of season three, the final, is called The Last Generation.
Wow. Jeez, that... Guess the next generation didn't go so well if it's
Oh, Seven of Nine is like a main character in Picard who's like a character from Voyager, and she's like the Data or the Spock. I don't know, she's a form of
about we stop trying to
understand this shit.
Yeah, I was gonna say make characters that are this version's version of the other character and make some new characters.
Yeah, well, so there is the Star Trek The Next Generation films. We'll be back in 2 weeks time for the Calvin timeline, the J.J. Abrams films, 2009 Into Darkness and Beyond. But we do have to continue the franchise ourselves before we get there. And AJ, I'm gonna pitch to you,
yeah,
Star Trek, The Man Who Killed Captain Kirk.
Oh my god.
And it's going to star Alan Ruck, who's having a moment because of Succession. And so I think that, you know, there would be a bit of a buy-in. And I just think that character is so Alan Ruck coded.
Yeah, right.
That it's like he still suits that role, and the having grown up as the man who killed Captain Kirk. And maybe wait, you know, because how long has it been now? Like, just under 30 years since that film came out. Let's wait another 48 years to make this movie. So it's been the 78 years it has been in time. And he somehow gets wind of Captain Kirk coming back. And he's now, like, 140.
Okay.
Why would he be 140? Do
you know, I was gonna wait till you were going to finish, and I was going to be like, Richard, I know that I technically came up with this idea, but you're doing so well, and this sounds legitimately so good. And then you're like, so he's 140. Like, okay, I'm out.
No, I just, yeah, that, like, living with the reputation of the man who shot Liberty Valance, essentially. And, yeah, you've thrown me there.
No, I just think, I think it's an interesting character to explore, and a famous enough actor that makes sense that he'd be there, you know?
If it said, Alan Ruck is the next captain of the Enterprise, I'd be like, good for him. I wouldn't be like, Cameron?
Yeah. My continue the franchise is also something that has actually happened, it sounds like. But I was just thinking, like, where's our female captain of the Enterprise? And I didn't look this up. I didn't go, like, I just assumed there weren't any. but Voyager, the one I know the least about, has a female captain, apparently. But let's go further. Let's make a whole non-male cast of the Enterprise, and let's deal directly with the like outrage that would come from that, and reflect on how, like, well, in the 24th century, no one would care. Sorry, Edgelords, you love your fucking utopia Star Trek so much. Well, this one, with our version of Spock on this one, non-binary, and there's nothing you can do about it.
And the ship is called the Enterprise.
Yeah, Enterprise.
Yeah, Enterprise.
No.
No, but it's the girls named it that.
Oh, the girls named it, so it's okay then. the male writers decided the woman named it, and therefore it's okay.
Calling them girls, I mean, as well.
It should be a situation where the crew is just happens to be comprised of very gender diverse folks, and maybe it's never brought up. Well, maybe it is, and that's
maybe they don't
it,
shut up,
like,
about it.
But maybe it's like, we were put on here as, like, we were just the best person for the job, the best woman and or person for the job.
Yeah. Or they go, and then at the end of the episode, it goes to boldly go where no woman has gone before.
And they all click their fingers and go, sisters.
and they fold their arms and they tilt their head a little bit, and like they're saying it back to back, obviously, that was implied. Yeah. Like, and they're and they smile at the camera.
And there is one male character on board, but he's sort of like a Homer Simpson delinquent type character, and
he's a big goof.
Yeah, as they're back to back folding their arms, he wanders in and, like, spills his lunch everywhere, and they look at him and then they roll their eyes and go, oh, Doobie. His name is Doobie. D-U-B-I.
Okay, I think that works.
Cool.
Now it's time, of course, to rank that franchise. So, AJ, what do we do?
Well, we've got a little list over on Letterboxd where we've ranked every franchise we've ever made. You'll find a link to it in the show notes. What are you thinking for this one? Where are we putting it? Throw out some movies. I'll tell you if I think it deserves to be above that franchise or below that franchise.
All right, let's okay, what about Star Trek, the original series?
I think it's below that franchise.
Yeah, I think it's probably well below that franchise. Mm-hmm. Do you know what? Actually, I'm going to find where it is because I forgot to bring this up. That I think this is actually a really comparable franchise too. Almost. Yeah. Well, I was hoping that First Contact was going to be the juicy, juicy thing that I thought would be. This is and that Nemesis was going to be the juicy, bad thing it was going to be. But
yeah,
and Brosnan, James Bond.
Yep. Which is near the Nymphomaniac constant, I believe.
Yeah. So, Brosnan, James Bond, where is GoldenEye? It's two below the Nymphomaniac constant.
I reckon... What's above... Silence what are the two Lambs above?
And Nymphomaniac.
I reckon it's above GoldenEye.
And below Silence of the Lambs. Nice.
Oh, is it? Is it? No. Oh, is it? Maybe it's better just because it's less like egregious.
Is it better than Anchorman?
Yes.
Okay, so it's the other side of the Nymphomaniac constant. Is it better than the Mighty Ducks?
Yes.
Is it better than Predator?
No.
Okay, so it goes below Predator, above the Mighty Ducks, and number 86.
What's above Predator? What's above Predator?
An American Tail.
Okay, what's above American Tail?
Regrets.
Really? What a funny order for these things. What do you think?
Above that is The Purge.
I feel like I'd prefer Star Trek to The Purge.
What about, is it better than Psycho?
No.
Okay, so it goes between The Purge and Psycho in 82?
Okay, sorry. Yes, I'm happy.
Okay, cool. Let me add that to the list. If you're playing at home, let us know how you did because we found out we do have people playing at home. Interestingly, Star Trek...
And a game I imagine is called Guessing Numbers.
They probably didn't come up with a cool title for it. What would you have called it?
I don't know. I'm more just making fun of the fact that the game is just guessing numbers.
All right, well, there's no next week to tease you on, although we will be doing something, a Patreon-voted off week next week, I believe.
Which is currently a tie, so get in there and break that tie, please, because I don't want to do like a double-barreled episode, like it's a cartoon.
But also, they're both
sitcom.
Quite good ideas, so it's like, we'll do one of them, and then the other one will just be...
Well, how about, I'll tell everyone what they are, how about that? Because that might... engage people in the subject. Okay.
I'm
engaged. My wife can't
engage the podcast.
Uncircumcised penis. Off week suggestion thread. Currently in first place we have pitching licensed video games for modern movies / games that you think could lead to an enjoyable / games that you think could lead to an enjoyable video game.
Movies?
Yeah. Well, that's not what he's written, and we're going with the suggestion that it's written. So that's in first place, and it's even with franchise crossover face-off, randomly draw two franchises, then try to pitch a crossover film, AJ vs. Richard. So that's from Vincent and Hayden, respectively. So go on, either vote for one of those or vote for another one if you want, but we will probably close the poll with just enough time to put an episode together, so that's a few days from now. And get on board there. If you enjoyed this episode though, head on over to Patreon where you can support us financially and also get all sorts of things like the post-credits scene that comes at you after this music ends. You can also jump on the Discord and say hi and tell us how woefully wrong we are about Star Trek. Or if you want to, you can just follow us on Instagram and Twitter at ColtPopture. These are all ways to support us in different ways. This has been disappointing.
Yeah.
After being so surprised at how much I enjoyed the original series, I really did not enjoy The Next Generation all that much, hoping that the 2009, the Calvin timeline, will make me feel something, I guess.
And I just want to say a massive thank you to all our pitiful female listeners. Thanks for doing what you do. We love every single one of you.
It's the listeners. It's the listenership that's pitiful. The size of them. Not the
look at the fucking size of them. I need to stop referencing TikToks on podcasts. There's like, you can tell when I downloaded TikTok if you go back and listen to every episode of this podcast. Because my vocabulary just became stupid fucking shit. Anyway.
Welcome along to the post-credits scene. This is a segment at the end of each episode where if you donate $5 or more over at patreon.com/coldpops, you get to give us something to talk about in this, the post-credits scene. If you are on that tier and you haven't done it yet, send in some post-credits scenes because we are running out. And we sent a message out to everyone being like, give them, and maybe five people responded. And I really want it to be at least like 10 weeks between people getting repeated questions, but at the moment it's going to be like 3 to 5 if we don't get more people on board. So get in there,
yeah.
Richard,
I will say we've got enough. Like we're not desperate. Like we got a few, but today's one comes to us from Green Day touring musician Jason White. Thanks for getting in touch with us, Jason. A lot of the movies you watch are from a different generation and different culture than yours. Have you made any embarrassing cultural misses on the podcast just from missing a reference or context? And what was the worst one? I think there's a, like, it's funny to say, like, I'm not embarrassed by any of the stuff that I didn't like because it's a different generation, because I think the generation is wrong. And like an example of that is like the James Bond movies from like, other than GoldenEye, everything pre Casino Royale, I'm like, I think this is terrible. And people vehemently disagree with that opinion, but it's like, I think you are wrong and you need to revisit these movies. The other big one that we meet for the off week for a Patreon podcast when we did Beavis and Butthead to America, and I think this is garbage, and I think that anyone who finds this funny is stupid.
Hilarious stuff. I'm forever haunted by years and years ago on some off week episode, I tried to remember the plot of Taxi Driver and said it was about an underground assassins network. I don't know where I got that from or why I said that, but that was wrong. There is. Can you reread the end of the question?
Have you made any embarrassing cultural misses on the podcast just from missing reference or context? And what was the worst one?
There is a definitive worst one. That we didn't make public, that we were both involved in, that maybe there's been enough time now to bring up.
Is this when we had the argument about who came up with the name of our podcast, the Patreon podcast?
No. That was cut out of the episode. Yeah, yeah. No. It would have been about a year ago now, we released an episode on the Predator franchise.
Oh, yeah.
And in the movie Predators, which features Adrian Brody, I'm not going to go into it, but we made several comments about a certain feature of Adrian Brody that we then got DM'd about, being like, you guys are being anti-Semitic by joking about this. And we were like, oh, Jesus Christ. And to give context, New Zealand does not have a large Jewish population. And when we explained ourselves to the person who DM'd us, they were like,
they weren't attacking us as well.
They weren't attacking. Like, but then they were like, yeah, I looked it up and you probably just weren't aware. So that's literally what the question is asking, is embarrassing cultural misses. We took the episode down and removed the references.
Well, because it was like one or two jokes. So it was like very easy to do.
But that was, I reckon that's the most embarrassed I've been, I think.
Yeah.
Because it was like, even though we have, like, the guy himself was like, that makes sense that you wouldn't know. So even though it was like kind of a good excuse, quote unquote, it's still like, I still was aware, like, enough to, like, when he told us what we'd said, I was like, right, yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
So that was embarrassing. But hey, you live and learn. And I think people get cancelled when they don't learn. Mm. You know, people get cancelled when they refuse to learn and refuse to change. And if we ever say anything on the podcast that you feel is an embarrassing cultural miss, then you should tell us, because I am all about the betterment of myself and becoming becoming the best version of myself I can be.
I want to become worse. send me new slurs. New slurs just dropped.
Oh my god, we didn't say a slur.
No, god, no.